Hi, I'm Morgan.
I'm Odette.
And I'm Madeline.
And we love Christian fiction.
We love it so much that we wanted to talk about it on a podcast.
Each episode, we will read classics of the genre or new releases.
And discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly. So come join us.
Hello, hello.
Hi, everybody.
We are back. We are back with another episode of Redeeming Lit Podcast.
Another book episode.
Another book episode.
We're here.
And we're ready to talk about books.
Yes, we are.
Honestly, though, can we be transparent with our listeners? When are we not ready to talk about books?
I wake up ready to talk about books, and I go to bed wishing that I talk to more people about books. So
even after, like, a podcast episode?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I feel like talking about books.
Most of our episodes, we have to, like, pull ourselves back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because we could just go on and on and on.
Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I will say, one of the reasons why I love this podcast is because I love talking about things after you have a collective experience. So one of my favorite things to do, besides obviously reading books, talking about them, is you go to a movie, like 7:30, and then you go out to a restaurant and you get apps and zerts and a little bevy, and you talk about the movie.
Talk about the movie.
Here's the thing, if someone says, I need to go home, crushing, because I'm like, I need to talk about this. Literally, there's been times, because my brother and I used to go to movies a lot more than we do now. Not because all the movie theaters around this is closed, but a lot have. Anyways, I would literally call him. I was like, well, if you have to go home, I'm gonna call you, and then I would talk to him in the car. I have to get it out. Like, I can't keep those kind of things inside. So I guess I should tell a date that before. Like, you should also pick a place for us to go after the movie.
because
I will talk about this, and if that's gonna bother you, I don't think we should see each other.
you just need to know this about me.
And I'll let you have your opinion. I don't care if you hated it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you hated the movie.
She just wants to talk about it.
I do want to talk about it because it's fresh in my mind. I have lots of thoughts. And I've been cataloging your thoughts during the whole movie.
Right.
Or during the whole book.
Right. Love it.
Which is why I think I struggle to just read books now and not have people to talk to.
Yeah, that is true.
So sometimes I just voice memo you guys about a book I'm reading because I'm like, I need to tell
someone. I love it.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I really am. I have that kind of relationship.
I know, it's amazing. Here's a question. If you ladies are like that too, do your husbands let you, like, talk to them about, like, Christian fiction books even if they have no interest in them because it's, like, what you're reading?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or any books in general. Let, just be
let me is a loose term. But I do talk to my husband about whatever book I'm reading, and he very graciously listens to me.
Mm. Ben is a big book person, so we will do that back and forth with each other. So, like, if he's reading something, he'll do the same to me, and vice versa.
I feel like before y'all had kids, wouldn't you go on silent book dates? Where you would, like, go somewhere, or maybe it was just when you were first married and you would both, like, sit on your couch and, like, be quiet and read a book. Or is that an imagination that I had?
That sounds blissful.
I don't think we actually ever did that. But regularly we will do. Ben is actually more of an audiobook person now. Okay. And pretty much since we've been married, he has been.
Okay.
So he will often, like, watch a film and I'm sitting there reading a book.
Mm.
We do that a lot. Like, because I'm like, oh, I want to be near you, but I have very annoyingly narrow tastes in films. Like, I watch three things.
Pride and Prejudice adaptations.
Basically, that's my big one.
That's your number one.
Number two? Could we guess number two?
Sure.
Like, is it like
1980s mysteries?
I do, like, there's a couple of TV shows that I will watch over and over and over again. Like, Murder, She Wrote, The Office. If they're on, I will always watch them. And then, I mean, I do love 1980s movies, but, like, I have to be in a mood for those. I'm always in the mood for Jane Austen. I'll always be in the mood for Murder, She Wrote. I tend to really like, I love the movie Night and Day with Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite. Like, movies like that where it's a little bit, like, kind of adventure-y, action-adventure, romance-type stuff. I think there's three or four of them that I would watch, like, every day. Like, we'll just kind of, if he wants to watch a movie with me, usually he suggests one of those. He's like, you want to watch this?
Like, basically, like, romantic suspense, but buddy comedies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes,
exactly.
I love that.
Exactly. Romancing the Stone. Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
What about period films? Do you have to be in the mood for that?
I do love a period film, but I do have to be in the mood for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
unless it's, again, unless it's Jane Austen.
Yeah.
Because I like to sit. It's harder now. I would watch them a lot more before I had kids. It's harder now to, like, because I just want to like sit and if you know whatever 4 hours long right? miniseries that's great. I want to sit and be able to watch the whole thing, yeah. have some snacks, and just like be in my feelings for the movie,
mm-hmm.
and then
yeah,
whatever. So
I think that's why when I'm in that kind of mood for a period film, because it's like I'll get into that mood, and I just like I can't. No modern movie is going to. Mm-hmm. quench that yes. mood. Mm-hmm. So then I watched The Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 version, because it's short enough that I feel like I can commit
just
to it.
Just 2 hours.
And, exactly, and it still gives me all the, you know,
the feels. It's a good
plus, I feel like I really enjoy movies that, like, I will rewatch movies, just mm-hmm. like I reread yeah. books, and, like, there's something comforting about it. Maybe because yes. you're not as worried. I actually read a study once that said that people who have anxiety and or depression feel better watching a show or rewatching a show or movie that they know because they don't have to spend any brain power wondering what's happening to the characters.
Yes.
Which checks out because I rewatch a lot of things.
And see, I feel that way. Right. I rewatch stuff. I watch so little things. But I like to rewatch stuff, but I like to reread books yes. too. But I'm much more adventurous with books. Like I'll start new books all the time. Oh, I'll read new books, like it's fine. But movies, maybe because they're visual and mm-hmm. it's like someone else dictating
what you're
my
seeing.
Visual yes. experience. Whereas yeah. in a book it's contained.
Yeah. Right?
It's like I yeah. get to dictate that based yeah. on what my own brain can handle. So like, yeah, I tend to only rewatch movies almost mm. always. Ben will be like, oh, we should try this new thing, and I'm like, and it takes a long time for me to say yes.
Versus if he was like, how about this new book? He'd be like, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Or Morgan, do you want to watch Romancing the Stone for the 50th time this month?
Yes, I will.
Yes, sure, of course.
Absolutely.
Will you make popcorn? Yes, great.
Done deal. Meet you in the living room for Romancing the Stone.
Yes.
With a large bowl of popcorn. And maybe some Mike and Ike's.
Off. Yes.
Let's go.
Anyways. Wow. Okay. Anywho, wow. It's literally not. We don't have a movie podcast or record. We have a book
we
podcast.
We could if you guys want to talk about Romancing the Stone a lot.
Listen, here's the thing. I think, in all honesty, the three of us could probably pick any topic and have some sort of lively conversation about it, because I think the way that we approach things is similar yet different enough that it provides deep conversations. And I feel like we're also both are all educated in different ways. Do you know what I'm saying? In yes. different levels and different things. We've had life experiences. And so I honestly think that if a listener like called us up and was like, hey, can you talk about this? I would honestly bet with certainty that we could.
I would first say, sure. listener, how did you get this number? Good question. And then I would say, yes, let's talk about that.
Let's say that it's a listener who knows us personally. Oh, so they have sure.
Okay, so then I wouldn't be so confused.
Yeah. Be like, oh, nice to see you.
Oh, hey. Wow, been a while.
Listen, yes. I have a podcast topic for you.
Okay, thanks for listening.
I'll have
thanks
thoughts.
For listening.
Absolutely. Anyways, okay, so we are here today to talk about the newest Dani Petrie book.
Yes.
Yes.
Her new series, Jeopardy Falls. The first one in the series is One Wrong Move. Yeah.
Yes,
So that's the book that we read and we're going to be discussing today.
Yes.
Yeah, which is exciting. We did read one of her books.
A novella. It was called Shifting Current.
Yes.
Last season.
Was that last season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a hybrid, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I think, was that the first hybrid?
It might have been. It was one of the first, for sure.
It may have been the one that I was, and I'm not taking credit if this wasn't, but I feel like I was like, what if we did a hybrid? Like, yes. what if we combine the two? So, you know.
You can take credit because the hybrid episodes were your idea.
Those were totally your idea.
Credit where credit is due, people.
Yes.
Hybrids were Odette's idea. And honestly, she's full of good ideas. So.
True.
Ideation is one of my top strengths, so not a surprise. Wow, it sounded very cocky. Humbleness is also one of my strengths. Anywho, so I think our normal, I don't think we have any trigger warnings for this book at all, but we do have our normal kind of housekeeping notes.
Mm-hmm.
We are together tonight, not virtual.
Yay.
But because of that, you're going to hear normal apartment sounds. You might hear cars, planes, trains, fans, etc. So, yeah. Also snacking.
Yes.
We make no apologies for our love of snacks.
We do not. I've got a little cold.
Yeah.
So you might hear me hacking at the lung. I'm okay. It's pop.
Don't worry. Oh, okay. She's fine.
She was at that store a while back, but she's recovered nicely.
She's back in action. Even if her voice doesn't fully sound that way. yeah, I think that's it. I don't think we have anything else housekeeping wise. No. Alrighty, so.
Let's do this thing.
Let's do this thing. Back cover copy.
Alright, here we go. Taunting riddles, a deadly string of heists, two broken hearts trapped in a killer's game. Christian O'Brady was pulled into a life of crime at a young age by his con artist parents. Now making amends for his corrupt past, he has become one of the country's foremost security experts. When a string of Southwestern art heists targets one of the galleries Christian secured, he is paired up with a gifted insurance investigator who has her own checkered past. Andy Forrester was a brilliant FBI forensic analyst until one of her colleagues destroyed her career, blaming her for mishandling evidence. She now puts those skills to work investigating insurance fraud, and this latest high-stakes case will test her gift to the limit. Drawn deep into a dangerous game with an opponent bent on revenge, Christian and Andy are in a race against the clock to catch him, but the perpetrator's game is far from finished, and one wrong move could be the death of them both.
Hence the title.
One wrong move. And I need to tell you guys something.
Oh boy.
This, again, as everyone here knows, no one's surprised, I didn't read the back cover. At all. Odette, maybe she read it to me. I have no memory of it. I don't know. She always claims to have read the back cover copy.
We literally read all these that we picked for this first batch of the
season. I don't think we did this one, because I think that, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have no memory of this. Clearly I wasn't paying attention. Do you have a memory of it? She's like Gandalf. I played Gandalf in my 9th grade high school play. Isn't that fun fact? Yes.
Is that the play where your co-star kissed you? No.
No, that what? Was...
Who kisses Gandalf? That was the...
just remember... That was the importance of being earnest, wasn't it? No.
That was the importance of being earnest. That was my senior year. But yes.
LOL, Gandalf doesn't have a kiss.
I know, that's not what goes. LOL, who kisses Gandalf?
That's how good of a Gandalf word it was.
Bilbo! Weird, friendly... little peck on the cheek. No, isn't that one of Gandalf's lines where he like walks into somewhere and he's like, I have no memory of this place.
Could you imagine walking to someone's house and saying that as your greeting?
Yes, because I think it all the time. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, so I feel like Odette is mistaken, but she's probably not. She has a mind like a steel trap.
I can't remember
either. So. To be fair, we read like 15 back covers.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyways, the point is Madeline's reading it and I'm like, they just gave away something major. Like the one
I noticed that too.
Scene that I like there was a gasp scene in this book for me where I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And I felt very foolish because it was literally on the back cover and I was like, I didn't see that coming. That was a scene that shocked me in the book.
Oh, now I'm curious, what part of the back cover?
About his past.
Oh.
Where it said he helped his conning family. And when he reveals that, like, he has this, like, deep heart-to-heart moment with Andy. It's, like,
basically halfway through the book when he reveals it.
Yeah. Because so he has this, like, deep heart-to-heart with Andy, and he's, like, bearing his soul. And I was like, oh, man. I didn't see that coming, honestly. Like, I was, like, genuinely, like, and it was on the back. The first sentence.
They also allude to it in, like, multiple scenes because he talks about, like, how he knows things and why he's a security expert throughout the book. And it's, like, and he's, like,
that could all be kind of, like, whatever. You know, smoke and mirrors. But then, get it?
Oh,
yes! Wow.
I didn't even try that. But I whispered that probably no one else heard it. But
say that again.
I said because his parents were illusionists.
So is that when you figured out that his parents were illusionists?
When he said that his parents were illusionists, yes, that's when I figured it out. But also when I figured it out. Yes, I just mean the whole thing. The point is, I didn't read the back cover, and that was a scene for me where I was like, "Oh wow, I didn't see that coming at all," and I feel very foolish now because it was literally the first line in the back. I get you.
That is silly. You silly goose.
Okay, have y'all seen the trend on social where it's like, I feel like I'm in new shows and stories, but it's literally like. Don't be silly, and then it's literally a picture, like, it's like one of those swiping carousels, you know? It's like, don't be silly, and it's like two best friends together, or we won't be silly tonight, and then it's like two geese that are dressed up in silly outfits when you swipe next, because it's like the silly goose is, anyways.
Sweet.
I have seen that, and I will tell you, when I first saw it, I was like, what am I even looking at?
Show me. Okay, I'm just gonna look
like
it
they're
up.
Wearing wigs. I can't picture why are these geese wearing wigs?
I really can't picture what we're talking about in my mind.
Madeline is opening a cough drop right now. Listeners. It will ASMR.
Okay.
Odette is feverishly looking up.
Okay, yeah. Well, while we're doing that, how about someone starts with star ratings?
I'll start with star ratings. Good idea, Odette. Good one. We do have control of this podcast. Good one. Let's rein it in. Okay, so I'm not going to lie. I'm going to start. I'm not going to lie. I have read some Dani Petrie before. Obviously, we read Shifting Currents on the podcast. I enjoyed that one. And I've read some of her Alaskan Wilderness series, which I've really enjoyed. Oh, pause.
I found one. Okay, look. Look here. So this one here.
You gotta describe what you're showing her.
Okay, so it's literally a picture of two girls, and it says, don't go out acting like silly gooses. And then they have, like, a picture of two geese.
Those are two girls.
No, but right here are two geese.
I'm not seeing that. I think maybe I saw something different. But right now here? I'm very confused about what I saw.
These are two geese.
Yeah. I mean, I see.
Why are they dressed like because they silly. Live in the 1760s?
Because they're silly.
They're silly geese. Violent.
Listen, here's the thing. You think a regular goose or geese are mean. And the reason why I know that is because my grandparents used to have them at their farm. And they would literally come and try to bite you with their
eyes.
They're really mean. They're really ornery. And we would literally take my grandma's cane and, like, have it as a weapon because they would come.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, show them who's boss.
Yes.
And they're, like, the size of a child. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They're pretty big. Oh, yeah. Okay. So another caveat to that. Wow. Sorry, Morgan. Your star rating's going to have to wait.
I'm okay with it.
Because we're talking about geese.
We're being silly geese.
So I went to a Christian college that for some reason just became notorious because there's all these Canada geese that would nest around
the campus. Okay.
And they would make nests and lay eggs and just be there on campus. And they literally, these geese were so mean. And would just attack students that they put up signs where they knew the nests were, caution, nesting goose, avoid this area. And they were all over campus.
Did they not do anything about these?
I mean, what are they going to do?
I don't know, rehome them to an area that's not campus?
I mean, unless I don't know. Cage them in. I feel like the college that I went to didn't have the resources to do that. I'm just going to say. To rehome the geese.
No
animal control department.
I don't know. Most colleges might not have animal control.
It was a small, private Christian school. But at one point, I remember walking with a group of friends past an area that we knew there was a nest, but we didn't see a goose. So we kind of, were giving the area a wide berth, but of nowhere, this goose just comes flying through the air and grabs my friend's hair in its beak and is pulling her hair.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy.
Wow.
That
is literally insane.
We just ran.
Was the goose still hanging on or did the goose fly away?
No, it flew away.
Okay.
That's horrifying.
Really saw us as a threat.
Apparently.
To its livelihood, so.
Apparently. And to its offspring, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
People say things about mama bears, but mama goose, gotta watch out for that.
Mama goose.
Speaking
of blood.
She is.
And nurse your own.
Speaking of animal eating hair, I have a story on your
gosh. What is this podcast episode?
So when I was a kid, I'd love to see if I could find the picture. So my brother, y'all have seen him on the podcast, and image and stuff. He had really short, buzzed hair when he was a kid, and it was white blonde. We were all very, very white blonde. But anyways, we were taking a picture at the beach one year in Chincoteague, Virginia, because that was where we went every year. Mm-hmm. We're in front of the petting zoo, and a llama starts eating his hair. She thought it was grass.
He thought it was grass.
He did, because it was because he was kind of right by the llama.
Those
and he was literally
floppy lips.
Ew. And it was, and there's this picture, and it's just and we're all because it's
walk away. Oh my gosh.
I haven't thought about that for a while. He's probably going to be why are you telling people that story?
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, okay, star ratings.
That's hilarious. I don't even know. Okay. Anyways,
we're not here to make geese or movies.
Oh boy. What was I saying? Oh,
star
so
rating.
Star ratings.
You've read some of the Alaskan.
I have, yes, and I've really enjoyed them. This was not my favorite Dani Petrie book that I have read. the story just didn't really hit for me, didn't really resonate. I had a hard time connecting with the characters. And so I think for that reason, I'm probably going to give it a 3, even though most of her books are usually like a 4 for me.
Mm-hmm.
This one, just something about the story didn't quite work for me. Could be timing, I don't know. But yeah, so I would say a 3, I think.
Okay. Madeline, do you want to go next?
Yes. Full disclosure, I got about 80% of the way through this book before I literally had to drive over to Odette's house to record this, so I did not finish it. But I think, I mean, y'all know me. This is no surprise. This is not my genre. Romantic suspense.
No matter who the author is.
No. It doesn't matter. Every romantic suspense I've ever picked up, I'm like, maybe I'll love this one. And then I just go, I just didn't love it every time. So I'm going to also give this a 3 because there was definitely like fun, excuse me, fun elements to it. But I mean, I hate to give it anything lower just because it's like, okay, well, I don't really like any romantic suspense book. Sure. But a 3 feels good. And also I didn't read the ending. Mm. So I feel like,
yeah,
I'm going to give it a 3 at least.
A little bit of a bump up for that resolution.
Yeah. Right. So.
Okay.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go a little bit higher. Listeners, if you're new here, you might not know this, but romantic suspense is easily top 2 genres for me. And so I've been reading those literally for decades. And so for me, I'm a big, big Dani Petrie fan. I've loved her Coastal Guardian series. I told the girls before we started recording, literally in January or December, I literally binged all 3 books and reread the novella that we read last season because it was like chef's kiss, like cherry on top situation. And I really, really enjoyed those. And I literally couldn't read them fast enough because I was like, ugh. I
love that.
Yeah. And so for this one, it definitely was not my favorite, but I'm going to give it a 3.5. I think that for me, there was a lot happening. And so like, I really enjoy when I'm reading romantic suspense and you're instantly taken into the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really feel like I like romantic suspense, that the buildup is chapters and chapters long. So I did appreciate how she like jumps right into the action. But I think for me, why it was a little bit lower than some of the other ones is because the parallel stories, and I understand why she had multiple mysteries being solved, but like for some reason my brain, and it, honestly, similar to Morgan, I have a lot going on outside of the podcast right now with work and just life. And so it could be that like I didn't have enough brain capacity to pay attention fully to 2 separate stories, yet they were intertwined obviously, but it was like at a certain point in the book, 2 couples kind of split off to go solve different crimes. And so I think that for me, I like had a hard time with that. But I will say one thing I've really, really enjoyed about Dani Petrie's kind of other series, which the Alaskan one is on my list next, is how if you read them back to back, they feel very much like a cohesive story about a person, a group of people, a place, a thing. And even if, and I'm not saying the mysteries intertwine, they're very individual. They're also standalone books, but I found a richness that I think potentially Jeopardy Falls could have down the road.
This is the very first.
Exactly. Yes. And very, there were couples that I'm very, very curious about. And so for me, I'm like, ooh, I will read book 2. I will read book 3. If you have a book 4 or novella, Dani, I will absolutely read that. So for me, 3.5. But again, I think that there was a lot going on here. I also don't know. I had this theory when I was reading it. Is this book series going to be longer? And so the setup of book 1 was more characters.
More intricate.
Like, so was the purpose that this is like a, is it a prequel or a prologue? Where it's like the book that's like before
that's
the...
all up. It's a prequel.
A prequel, yeah. A prologue is just like a little chapter or something. Not anyway, so just a thought. Dani also not telling you what to do by any means.
That's like, here's a thought.
Here's a thought. But, I thought it was great overall. And I will say one other thing. I do have a question for you, Dani, if you're listening to this podcast. I need to know, were you inspired by the silhouette of the man? Well, I guess it's actually a picture, but it has silhouette components.
Yes.
Of the man.
Profile.
The profile. Thank you, Madeline. Of the man. I think he looks like Mark Sloan from Grey's Anatomy. So, just curious if that was your inspiration.
AKA
McSteamy.
Well, this is conventionally published, right?
Yes.
A lot of times.
Bethany House.
Yes.
Bethany House, were you inspired by Mark Sloan from
Grey's Anatomy? A lot of times authors don't have, like, much say in the picking out of there. The cover design department will be like, here's what we're thinking. Do you want to pick from one of these two?
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. But a lot of times authors won't. I mean, they don't get a ton of. I mean, she could have gone and been like, something, you know.
Let's have a Southwest vibe to it. Which that was a fun component.
McSteamy.
Yeah. McSteamy in Southwest vibes.
She very well could have
that. Yeah. I do wonder, we'll have to ask an author next time that we chat with an author who's conventionally published, because I'm curious if, like, what that process is like. So the reason why, and this is a tangent, but whatever, is, like, for, like, I work in an agency, I've worked at many agencies, there's always, like, a creative department, and the idea is, like, if we have a vision for something or a client has a vision for something, you work, you talk to the designer, you talk to the copywriter, you talk to the creative director, and you're like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. I usually use a mood board or something to communicate, because I found that if you're a creative person, visuals help, you know, and the old adage, what a picture is worth a thousand words. Yeah. So I'd be curious if, like, the author is able to, like, communicate, like, based on, or is it that, like, it, the process is, hey, we know the story and we've created some, like, mood boards, or what's the thing that has all the words, a word cloud?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Or something like, and then that's passed off, or does the author get to sit down and talk to the editor or the creative department and say, hey, this is what I'm envisioning, and then they can take and run with it. You know what I mean?
And I'm sure, it also depends on the author, because
and the publisher.
Some author and publisher. Yeah. I'm sure some authors are more like, I need, like, there are certain things that I have to have for this cover, you know, but
yeah. Anyways, I'd be curious too.
I remember chatting with, who were we chatting with?
Julie Clausen, I think.
Yes. And she, because we were talking about the cover of that book, and she had mentioned that something about, like, the dress, the woman.
She, like, fought for a different dress or something, right? Or
well, it was, like, it had originally been a different color or something,
something,
and she was like, maybe it should be this color.
So when she saw the color, like,
when she saw
the finished cover, she was shocked, like, pleasantly surprised, because they color saturated the dress when the actual, like, model in the original kind of cover shoot, or
that's
whatever,
right.
Was wearing. It was, like, a very neutral colored,
so
she
was,
like, more appropriate to the period, honestly, because purple dye would have been
really expensive.
Trickier.
And Julie Clausen was, like, surprised by that, because she didn't know they were going to do that.
Yeah. I also feel like we had a conversation maybe with Bethany Turner about the do-over and the cover there, and maybe, like, about that, but I can't remember the details. I just remember we talked about it. Anyways. Okay, so we talked to Becky Wade about her covers, her cover models for anyways. All right, so I think because this is a new book, Madeline, right? You're not going to do any reviews because there's not really any out there.
There's not a lot. This just came out, like, 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know how the cycle of
brand
reviews.
Brand
spanking new. And people take time to write reviews. You know what I'm saying?
They sure do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, are we ready, friends? Are we ready?
Let's dive in.
Wow. That sound just every time.
We love that sound bite, guys. We love it so much.
I think I can't remember. Oh no, I shared this with my sister. So I'm having a little bit of trouble, and you know, if any of you are sound editors out there, feel free to send us an email or a DM. But I'm having a little bit of trouble with some sound bites and, like, editing them into the podcast. So I asked one of my coworkers on my team, because he's a sound and audio guy at his church, and then I was like, I'm literally gonna. He's like, absolutely, I'll help you. And I'm like, I'm gonna send him this swoon scale, and dive in. He's gonna be like, what the?
What is
I know.
This?
I'm like, am I ready?
That's true.
But it's also like, I'm his boss, so I'm like, is that gonna be like, whatever? I was like, I don't care. I just thought about it, and I was like, he probably honestly won't even care. But I just, like, had this thought when I was about to send him the sound files of, like, just so you know, like, the swoon scale. Like, he probably doesn't even know. Anyways, it was just funny. Okay, but what's not funny is this book. So
that seems really.
Sorry, I just
really
made
it switched on the slalom there. I think maybe because it's intense.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Intense. Yes,
high
intensity.
So I think we're just gonna, like,
do a quick kind of summary.
We're gonna
and talk about
we're
characters.
Gonna rapid fire through this.
Yes,
rapid
right?
fire. Okay. All right.
Ooh, give a projected time. Give her how long you think you're gonna take?
10 minutes. 10 minutes, right?
11 and a half.
Okay, 11.5.
What are you gonna say?
I'm gonna say 10.
Okay.
I'm gonna say 10. I think.
All right.
I think we can do it.
Okay, and let's go. Okay, so this book opens, and we meet Christian, Well, no, the prologue, we meet the bad guy, Cyrus.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just remember the name Cyrus. Just, like, lock it away. He's a crook. He's a crook in all sense of the words.
Yes.
The word. And then we meet, like, in the first chapter, Christian. And he's literally in the middle of a free climb. And he gets a call from a guy who's, like, freaking out when my art museum has been robbed. His name's Tad.
And yes. Tad cares about Christian because Christian installed the security system in his
And he's arc. Like, can you get over here, man? And he's, like, really upset. He's like, let me climb down this mountain. He climbs down the mountain and drives to the museum. Also, second chapter or third chapter, we meet Andy, who is an insurance investigator. Different than insurance adjuster. She's basically investigating to figure out kind of who's to blame and where does the money kind of go.
Yes.
And so basically from that...
But she was FBI.
She was FBI, and very early on, like, in the book, you realize there was kind of a traumatic situation that happened.
Yes.
As to why she's no longer with the FBI. But she shows up, and, like, instantly, her and Christian are like, ooh, look at each other. Like,
sparks. The way sparks are flying.
Sparks be flying. Like, the 4th of July.
Yes, exactly. We're in New Mexico, by the way.
Yes. Yes, New Mexico. And so basically from this, then they start investigating and realize that, like, oh, there's a lot more to this than just the simple crime that was committed. Also, the security system is very elaborate. In order to get in, you have to have a fob, basically a key fob. Then you have to go into the safe, unlock the safe to turn off the alarm. So it's like a very elaborate system. And it's very clear that Christian has some kind of inside knowledge of why you would need a security system that level and the way security systems work.
But while they're investigating his art gallery, this guy has three art galleries.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a call that a second gallery has been robbed.
Yeah.
So then they're like, let's go look at this one. Mm-hmm. They bring in the local sheriff. They got to inform the FBI too because it's like art.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. And so they're on their way to this one in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And on their way,
This is Andy and Christian.
Andy and Christian on their way. They get, like, followed by the Christian notices that somebody's following them. Basically, this person runs them off the road. They, like...
Barely survive.
The car they're in, like, kind of is teetering on a cliff. They have
to jump out,
climb up.
Yeah.
Whole big thing.
Good thing Christian's a free climber.
Good thing.
How convenient. So then... They call his, and this is where we meet his brother. So then he's like, don't worry, I know a guy, you know, because we got to get, like, a new car. We got to get, like, you know, clothes. And she's wearing a skirt, which, like, I feel like if you're going to go investigate a museum heist, don't wear a skirt. Lesson learned, you know what I'm saying?
Lesson learned.
That's true. Yeah. Or if you have shorts on underneath, it just feels like there might be a lot happening.
We've learned a lot of fashion lessons from our books.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I will never show up to a crime scene wearing alligator shoes.
No. Do you know what else I'll never do? Wear heels if I'm going to a dinosaur park. Like in Jurassic Park. Where she's like running
through a dinosaur. Oh, I was like, what book are you talking about?
Yes. I'm just saying. There's a reality to that.
Yes.
Why would you ever go to a dinosaur park is the follow-up question. Because if you've seen that movie, you should.
I would not. Do you know?
Jurassic Park.
Okay, here's the thing. What part of Odette would say, I'm going to go to a...
Zero park.
None. Well, none. That was the point. Listen, the clock is ticking. Not stopping this clock.
Well, we're discounting a minute for that. Okay, so basically we meet. Yes, we are.
Okay,
we are. Yeah. So
20 seconds.
No. So basically, then his brother shows up with his sister, and his sister brings clothes for and they bring a car for Andy and Christian.
But Andy's like, your brother is Deckard Reinhardt. What's his name? Yep.
Deckard something like that. Deckard something.
Yeah.
Deckard
and basically Blackwater? She's like, oh my God, he's the reason why he's the reason why I no longer work at the FBI. You find out.
Yes.
The summary is Deckard is a private PI. He got hired by a family who basically said that the FBI lost evidence and basically accused the wrong man and put the wrong man in prison.
McLeod.
L-E-O-D.
McLeod?
McLeod.
M-C-L-E-O-D. M-C-L-E-O-D. McLeod.
That's McLeod?
Yes.
Oh, wow. There we go. Huh. We should ask Alexa how she would say it.
I don't trust Alexa for beans.
That's from Seastrips of
I-D.
You know. We got excited. That was a candle. Everything's fine. Okay. Anyways.
Not a lit.
Okay. So, I'm determined to it. To win this time frame. Okay, so with this, basically, she's immediately like, oh my God, your brother's this guy. How did I not know this? And he's like, I use a different last name. Christian says that. And basically, Deckard is the PI who pointed out he was hired by the family of the guy that was, quote unquote, wrongfully imprisoned because evidence was lost. And so yes. she was then fired from the FBI.
Yes.
And she's like, I didn't do that, though, because she was a forensic... and
she said I was set up.
Yes. Yeah,
forensic analyst.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She was like, I was set up. So basically, now there's a lot of drama, and Deckard is like, watch your back, Christian. Watch your back. Anyways, and so then, basically...
Madeline just proved herself right to me.
The cloud.
Hear it?
How you smelled it. Oh, darn you.
Cloud.
McCloud. You're so annoying.
She's right. This is literally the sister dynamic, and I am here 100 feet for it.
Sorry.
Okay, so anyways.
I just had to...
She had to get that one.
Same.
That's fair.
Same. If you ask my sister if there's things I know that I'm right about as a younger sister... and I can prove her wrong, I'm going to do everything in my power.
I have to do it.
I have to pull up
the pronunciation on Google.
Yeah, exactly. So then basically they take the new car and they go to the second museum. And basically they get to the second museum and the FBI is now investigating because it's a second museum that Tad owns. Mm-hmm. And she shows up there and then you meet Adam, who is the partner of her ex-fiance, Jeremy, who basically dumped her while she was... You two are looking at me like I'm making something.
No, wrong. You're right.
Her ex-fiance who broke up with her after she was accused and fired from the FBI. And yes. He literally still got married on her wedding day and went on the honeymoon they're supposed to go. So anyways, so there's obviously a lot there. Yeah, brutal. Yeah. Exactly. So then kind of the next big thing that happens is, oh, and along the way, the Riddles, they're literally getting notes on their car as they're like going to different museums. So like, how is this possible? And they're like magician or illusionist riddles.
Yes.
And so then basically they go to the third museum because they're worried that the third museum is going to get robbed and it's full of a wine collection. Tad is very eccentric. Mm-hmm. And basically they're in kind of the inner office of it, and the building is set on fire by the thieves trying to kill them because they've multiple times have been tried to kill it at this point. Mm-hmm. And so basically they barely get out of the museum. The entire museum ends up going up in smoke and burning. So now he no longer has this wine collection. And so they're like, what is happening?
They're like, Christian's like, let's go back to my family's ranch so we can be safe and hide out.
So they do that. And basically while they're on the way, Andy's best friend, Harper, calls her. She's like, yo, what's going on, girl? And she's like, listen here, I've been through a lot. It's not safe. And she's like, well, I'm still coming to see you. So then she ends up coming to the ranch. So then, basically, from there, and there's obviously sparks of romance happening here during this sitch between Christian and Andy. You get, it's their POV.
That works, too.
Yeah. And basically, you kind of get in their heads. They're clearly attracted to each other, but Christian is kind of like, I got to tell her this thing. And you're like, what's this thing? If you read the back cover, you might think it's about the con, or you might be surprised, like Morgan. Either way, it's part of the story. So basically then, Christian convinces Deckard to go investigate Andy's story because she claims she was set up. He believes her because he's in love with her.
And he wants Deckard to take
his... So Harper's like, I'm going to go with you because my girl didn't commit this crime, and I'm going to prove it too. And Deckard's like, whatever. So they go off on an adventure. Long story short, they basically prove that it was an elaborate conspiracy. They end up flying all over the country. They end up proving that right and proving
Andy
Andy's
was
innocent. Yes. In the meantime, basically then Christian confesses to Andy and is like, hey, guess what? I have a past. I used to be a con. I was in juvie. They start realizing that the person doing the robberies is his old partner who he backed out of and ended up in jail for, who his old partner, Ethan, also ended up in jail. But
then like Deckard...
Or Christian.
Deckard came to know Christ. And then while Christian was in jail, like Deckard... Like Christian witnessed to Christian. Christian came to know Christ.
So then
Christian was trying to witness to Ethan. Ethan wasn't having it. Christian got out. Ethan stayed in.
Yes, and then Christian became a PI and a security consultant. So then basically from there, you like kind of follow the evolution of that because Christian realizes, he's pulling off. Ethan's going to pull off a art heist that I said it was too much and I like bowed out. And the guy Cypress is the kind of sidekick or henchman, and there's a connection there to a drug lord, Teresa, or drug lord's wife,
mm-hmm.
in Mexico, mm-hmm. and then basically the book ends with obviously a showdown in the New Mexican desert.
Wow.
And then, you know, kind of ends with obviously Christian and Andy being together. And then Harper's like, I'm gonna go on an adventure, and Decker drops her off at the airport, so obviously we know that it's changing along the way. And that's gonna be, I think, the next book.
Okay.
And we should also have
Harper and Shirley Harper. Well, they got a lot of page time.
They did. Well, and then the other couple, real quick, is Grayson, who kind of owns the private security firm, and Riley.
No, he doesn't own it. He sold it to Deckard and Christian, but he just works there for them.
And him and their sister Riley definitely have something going on.
They've got a flirty McFlirterson situation.
And there's like an age gap situation.
10 years.
Yeah.
Which he keeps bringing up, like intentionally on purpose.
But he's like an old man.
She's trying to convince himself that it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
Girl, that was 10 minutes.
That's what I said.
A little bit less.
Nice.
Maybe, because
we didn't even discount the time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you discount the time, if you like you took off a minute maybe for the tangents.
That was pretty good, Odette.
That's impressive.
So also, one thing I'm really proud of is... Listeners, if you haven't read this book, I think the book's still going to be interesting because we did not get into everything.
No.
And I think that, to me, I feel like for romantic suspense, I feel like it's fun to mix it up.
Yes.
I'd never mind spoiling it, and I don't think our listeners at this point... Also, I feel like if you're listening to a book podcast, the chances of something being spoiled are pretty high.
That's true.
We love spoilers on this book podcast.
That's true.
We make no ifs, ands, buts.
We also don't even give disclaimers that it's a spoiler. It's more like you're along for this ride, and here we go. So, alrighty. Up next, we have
Morgan's recommended reads.
Morgan, what do you got for us?
So, I, of course, we have already talked about. There's various other Danny Petrie books out there that are fabulous and interesting, and we love Danny. So even though this wasn't one of our favorites, I highly recommend
lots of her
other books. Yeah, we're big fans. What I decided to pull out from this one specifically, instead of going the conventional recommending other romantic suspense novels. I mean, these have a suspenseful element, what I'm going to recommend. I pulled out specifically the art theft heist element.
Oh, okay.
Because I found myself when I was reading this, for some reason, like, I was like, I want to know more about that. Like, I just, like, more details about the artwork that was stolen, the reason for that, wanted to know more of the art, like, finding out more about those elements of the story as opposed to just, like, how they were going to try to find the person who did it. I was intrigued by that, and I have read a couple of books that were about that, specifically about
art theft
and the world of kind of like high-end art theft, basically, that I thought were really interesting. The first one is one that I probably would never have picked up on my own, but I read it for a book club years ago, and it was very popular, so people have probably read it, but it's called The Art Forger by B.A. Shapiro.
Ooh, okay.
And this was really interesting. It was about, or it is about, it's about this woman who, she, like, works in, she's, like, she replicates paintings, like, replicates famous paintings.
Okay. For, like, legally, or?
Yeah. Okay. Like, it's, like, she's hired to do this. Okay. Like, this is her job.
Reproductions.
Yes, reproductions. And she stumbles across this huge historical conspiracy, basically, that, like, these very famous well-known pictures were stolen and then painted over. Because she's asked to reproduce one of these, like, paintings. It's been painted over.
Oh.
And she discovers that while she's kind of, like, looking at it and reproducing. Because she, like, gets the painting and she's... has it in her apartment and she's reproducing it on smaller scales or whatever. And she discovers she's like, there's like some sort of imperfection in it. And she's like, what's going on here? And so she delves into it deeper and realizes there's a whole other painting underneath this. And she's like, what the heck? What's happening?
Dang.
And then discovers like these unsolved cases basically. Wow. And this kind of embroils her in this intrigue, like figuring out what happened. And kind of like into the nitty gritty world of art theft and like, it was just very interesting.
Is it a Christian fiction?
No. Neither of these are Christian fiction, but I don't think that there was anything. I mean, there might be some language or something in them, but it wasn't. I don't remember anything questionable about it. But it was very interesting to me, just kind of like that was fascinating. And I'm sure that's something that's been done. I don't know enough. Like, I didn't do side research.
Yeah.
But I thought that was like a really interesting.
Yeah,
it was a cool book, and it delved deeper into that world. Because art theft feels very like almost like high class. It's like high class crime. Yeah. I don't know. Is that a thing?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Have you seen the show White Collar?
I have not, but I was thinking about that because I know that
you've seen that show. So
I've never seen it.
It's on USA Network. I'm pretty sure it's on maybe Amazon or it might even be Netflix or something. But it's literally like it was back when like Monk was like the heyday in my mind of USA Network.
Yeah.
Like 10, 15 years ago. And basically the show is the main character, Neil Caffrey, played by Matt Bomer, is a art thief that's arrested. And then basically he ends up working with an FBI agent to solve crimes. But they're like art, like theft, like those kind of like crimes. Anyways, and then of course like he's also like, you don't know if you can trust him, you know? So there's the whole dynamic of it. And he's like, because he was an expert forger. And so he's like really good at what he... It's fascinating, and if you like that kind of thing...
I do like that kind of thing. That would be right in my alley. I should actually watch it.
It's very interesting because it's like a situational kind of show, and then there's usually like one kind of crime throughout the whole season or whatever, but like I think there might be like 6 or 7 seasons. I don't know that I ever watched it the whole way through, but I remember enjoying it, and I like... I think I've restarted this first season a couple times. I'm like, oh, I need to just like move on, but then I think it's one of those shows that things build, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, anyways...
That's interesting. Yeah, it's been on my list for a while just because I liked that era of USA shows. Okay, the other one is much more, it's similar vein, but I would call The Art Forger was kind of like literary fiction.
Okay.
Okay.
And this is probably more almost borderline cozy mystery, like romantic cozy mystery. And it is called Counterfeit Conspiracies by Ritter Ames, who is a writer for the Gemma Halliday Publishing Company, or she was for a while, which is one of my favorite indie press publishing companies. But so this one was about, she was kind of probably similar to White Collar. That might have been a little bit of the vibe. But she was an art thief and then ends up getting kind of roped into helping solve
crimes.
So she's a little bit like, there's a lot of world travel in it, and she's kind of on the road a little bit. Yeah, going rogue. Like there's a lot of elements. It's been a while since I read it, but I really enjoyed that one too. And it was more comedic. Like it was funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's fun.
When you're reading it. And so I like that one. That was Counterfeit Conspiracies by Ritter Ames and The Art Forger by B.A. Shapiro.
Wow. I love that, Morgan. Two great recommendations. Okay. Up next.
Odette's Relevant Research.
You know me, I have random and relevant research. So I'm going to start with something that is very kind of aligns with Morgan, the direction you were thinking. So art heists.
Okay.
So I did start going down the path of the 5 most memorable art heists in history, but instead I wanted to talk about one that I have a memory because I've been to the museum. So there's this museum in Boston, and it's called the Isabella Stewart Gartner Museum. And so I'm going to read you, this is from the museum's website, and it's like very obvious when you go to the museum that this is like part of the story, okay?
Okay.
The Gartner Museum Theft. An active and ongoing investigation.
Whoa.
The museum is offering a $10 million reward for information leading to the recovery of the stolen works. The 1990 theft of 13 works of art from the Isabel Stewart Gardner Museum's collection remains unsolved. Although the museum's commitment to resolving the crime has never diminished since its occurrence 31 years ago. Well, it should be 33 at this point, but I guess the website hasn't been updated. Sure. The museum, the FBI, and the U.S. Attorney's Office are still seeking viable leads that could result in the safe return of art. The museum is offering a $10 million reward for information leading directly to the safe return of the stolen works. A share of the reward would be given in exchange for the information leading to the restitution of any portion of the works. A separate reward of $100,000 is being offered for the return of the Napoleonic Eagle finale. Anyone with information should contact the museum directly.
But I feel like we should talk about, so like wow. this was like,
never heard of this.
Yeah.
No.
I've been to this museum. If you go to Boston, it's actually very fun. So basically she was this woman who had this elaborate art collection. So it's like still kind of set up like her home. And so you kind of walk through, cool. It's really fun. And like, you can literally see, so the theft, I'm going to see if I can click on this here. Okay. To learn about the theft. Okay. What happened at the Gardner Museum in early hours of March 18th, 1990? The night that 13 works of art were stolen in the single largest property theft in the world.
Whoa. Wow. Okay.
Okay. So basically, she had Edgar Degas paintings that were stolen.
Oh. All 10 were Degas?
No, there was Rembrandt.
Okay.
So there was two Edgar Degas, Rembrandt, John Vermeer. Another Edgar Degas.
Four Degas.
Mm-hmm. And then this is the thing that I talked about here. The Anton Denis Clot. I don't know how you would say that.
Chaudet.
Eagle. So it's like a decorative eagle,
yes,
that they're offering a separate reward for. Hmm. So, you know, if you're looking to make some money, maybe you should dive into the world of art research.
Surely they've been sold. I mean, they had to have been sold to private collectors by this point, right?
Rembrandt.
Surely.
Rembrandt, and then there's a Chinese sort of urn.
From what dynasty?
Let's see. I'll find out. I'm going to click on it.
Yeah. So dynasty.
It's Chinese Gu, 12th century BCE. It's bronze. It is 26.5.
12th century BC?
Mm-hmm.
That's really old.
Sheesh. So she kept meticulous records of many of her acquisitions. So that was kind of part of it. It was like easy to tell, and they could tell that these things were stolen, and they've never been able to figure out why.
That's
so unsolved. Wow. It's worth going to, because it's definitely like a cool, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, like they literally have like, if I remember correctly, it's probably been about 6 or 7 years or 8 years since I've been there, but I'm pretty sure they had like little plaques of where the stuff was, you know what I'm saying? And like the fact that it's stolen. So anyways,
that's interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah. The other thing I want to talk about is Lordsburg, New Mexico. So
they mentioned that in this book
multiple times. And I was like, hold up. I thought this was a place, and this is my own naivete as someone who has never been in the Southwest, but is absolutely on my list. The furthest west.
Is that your favorite region? Is it your favorite region?
You know what? It is now.
It is now.
Gotta impress my new boss, D'Angelo.
What about the desert? It's my favorite ecosystem. It's my favorite ecosystem.
So my own naivete, potentially, that I thought Stephen Bly in The Outlaw's Twin Sister that we read and I've gushed about 4 years with Del Norte. There's the train. Oh my God, how kismet was that?
Wow.
That was amazing. Train.
Nice. But wasn't that series called The Bells of Lordsburg?
Yes. Oh, so I thought Lordsburg was a fictionalized place. No, it's real.
It exists.
It really exists. Cool. And I feel like I should have talked about this on the episode we're talking about now. Okay. So it is a city in New Mexico, and it is along the Arizona border. The population was 2,797 at the 2010 census, down from 3,379 in 2000. It was founded in 1880. Are you thinking to yourself, how close is it to the Mexican border? If you remember the book.
I am thinking
They went back and forth. She went to the Mexican prison to get...
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Take a guess. How far do you think it is?
30 miles. Okay, so it's right... I'm very bad at geography. So it's right on the Arizona line, right? You said?
Mm-hmm. New Mexico and Arizona, yep.
Arizona's up here. Is Arizona above New Mexico or the side? I think they're next to each other.
Okay, so then Mexico's.
You said 30 miles?
Yeah.
What's your guess? How long did it take them?
I mean, it was by horse and wagon.
Okay, but how long did it take them? It was like
the entire
day,
night.
2 days?
It was
the entire night.
Do you remember? Because they were going with Paco in the back of the...
I remember, but what I want to know is how long did they travel?
I think it was like the early hours of the morning when they got to take her brother out of...
prison. All day and all night or just all night?
Just all night.
Okay. You said 16 miles.
Nope. 83 miles.
83?
Wow.
Nope, not possible. I'm telling you right now. Horse and buggy, 83 miles, all night, one night, absolutely not. Not possible.
It would be a horse and a wagon.
It must have been a couple of days. It had to have been. There's no way you could do that in one night. 83 miles.
There's no way.
No way.
The average speed for horse-drawn carriage is 2 to 3 miles an hour.
Correct. Yeah. Which is why I guessed 16.
Okay, how fast do carriages go in the 1800s? So apparently they could cap out at about 4 miles per hour. I mean, to be fair though, here's the reality. It's possible that there was a exaggeration
Where's the calculator? My phone's being used for recording. So even if it's a 12, let's be generous and say 12 hours. Okay. For capping out at 4?
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Del Norte would also...
It's 48. 48. That's being generous.
Okay.
More than likely.
Let's say 3 times 72. Okay, so like, probably took them a day and a half.
Yes.
Like 36 hours.
Okay, so on the way back, I feel like it did, but on the way there.
36 times 3 would be, you could go like 100 miles.
Well, the reason why I'm thinking that is because wasn't that the scene? Which, listeners, if you have not read The Outlaw's Twin Sister, we recommend. It's also in season 1.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's I think one of the best recommendations of that I have given to these lovely ladies.
Oh, I love
that's
true.
Stephen Bly.
So good.
I feel like 10 out of 10 because like most books we come to an agreement, but I was the one who was like, no, I love Stephen Bly. Let's read it. But
and now we've read Stephen Bly every season.
Now we're gonna read it.
Of course,
Bly. Of course. We are.
Now I kind of want to read The Outlaw's Twin Sister again. But anyways,
We should read it again. Good.
Okay. Anywho, that's the scene when they're in the desert, like riding.
Yeah.
To the Mexican prison. To rescue her brother. That's the scene where her and Del Norte have their heart to heart with the night sky and they kiss
and
for the first time.
Oh
because she's like, I'm 32, and she like cries because she's 32 and never kissed anybody.
Yes, and he's like, I'll kiss you right now. You kidding me? I've been wanting to do this for days.
No questions asked.
For days.
Done.
Yeah. Anyways, so there you go. So Lordsburg is a real place in New Mexico.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Fun
okay.
Fact. Gosh, I want to read that book again.
I know.
Such
too.
A good
last
book.
Last but not least. Here's a reality. Ladies, how much do you know about the rodeo?
I know a decent amount about the rodeo.
Do you know about the history of the rodeo?
Probably not the history, no.
Do you know about the rodeo at Madeline?
Yeah.
We've got family that like regularly ride in the rodeo.
Mm, I love that. Okay, so I know a little bit.
We're from Texas, disclaimer.
So there's a lot of people down there.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a little bit exposure by seeing it at a local farm show, but I just want to read a brief history. This is from the Smithsonian Magazine, so you know it's legit.
Okay.
Sure. So I'm just going to read a little bit excerpt from the article about it. Not going to dive in too deep because apparently this is a brief history and it's very long. So
okay.
I think brief means different things to different people.
Sure.
Okay. So the modern gold and rhinestone, big money televised sport of rodeo owes just about everything, its traditions, its attitudes, fashion, to the rough-and-tumble Mexican cowboys of the early 1800s. These vaqueros. Ranch hands, yes, known as vaqueros, perfected the roping and riding skills that we see in today's competitions. They also innovated rodeo fashion, leather boots, chaps, big hats, and the rest. And it was in Mexico that the sport got its name, derived from the Spanish verb rodear, to encircle or round up.
So apparently I did know about the history of the rodeo.
Okay.
Because I did actually know all of that.
Nice. Good for you.
There you go.
I always get delighted when I'm like, no, I don't know that. And I'm like, I did know that.
So if you're asking yourself, well, how did it come to America then? That is a fabulous question. I'm going to skip a good chunk of this brief history. But the more organized competition that would become the American rodeo gained popularity at events such as Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show, which began in 1883, as a massive spectacle with hundreds of performers. In 1893, Buffalo Bill's shows drew 3 million attendees outside Chicago during the World Columbian Exposition. Such shows established rodeo as an American fixture by romanticizing a West that was already rapidly changing. So, there you go.
Okay.
So, it harkens back to centuries ago.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah. I feel like I need to go to a rodeo at some point in my life.
It's fun.
Yeah. Anyways,
people are into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I have for my
that's great.
My relevant research.
The swoon scale.
The swoon scale.
The swoon scale.
All right. Who wants to tell our listeners what the swoon scale is? In case this is the first and hopefully not the last episode.
If this is your first, it won't be your last. We've been a delight so far.
We have been a delight.
We have.
If we say so ourselves.
We do say it.
And just a little bit silly. But in a good way.
That's fun.
So our swoon scale is how we rate the swooniness of the book and or the characters.
Mm-hmm.
On a scale from 0 to Colin Firth in a wet shirt, i.e. the 95
classic
Pride and Prejudice adaptation starring Colin Firth and Jennifer Ely.
Correct.
Love that.
That's what it is.
And we evolve it each time. So
yes.
Our evolution this time.
Today's kind of subcategory for us to play around in.
Yes.
Ooh,
is
I love that.
Heist movies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Swooniest heist movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Basically, pick a heist movie that you think represents the swooniness of said book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, do it.
Okay, so, unfortunately for me, I didn't find this book super swoony. I felt like the romance between the two main characters, Andy and, keep wanting to say Christopher. Is Andy
Christian?
I know it's Christian, but I keep wanting, is Andy Christopher as a person?
Andy Christopher?
Right?
Never heard of him.
There's a character.
I know.
Can you look up to see if Andy Christopher is a person?
Sure,
a
real
life person.
Or a fictional character that she may have read about?
That's also possible. So,
Andy Christensen?
No. No, no. Andy Christopher? Maybe it's a character. Anyways, this is...
Andy Christopherson?
No.
Andy Christopher.
Andy Christopher.
How do they spell Andy?
You don't know what this person is. It's a Broadway actor.
Oh, wow. that's not what I was thinking. Okay. Anyways, now I have to look this up myself.
Do you want someone else to go?
Christopher, yeah, someone else go.
Madeline,
sure.
Do you want to go?
Sure, I will go. So, I think what Morgan was saying was that she didn't find the book super swoony, but then she got it. Oh, she found it? Oh, go ahead.
It's just a romance author.
Oh,
Andy
okay.
Christopher.
Okay.
There you go. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry. I didn't find the book super swoony because it felt like I had a really hard time connecting to the two main characters. There was so much going on that it felt like their love story didn't, I don't know, it just didn't quite hit, and I wasn't, I don't know, like their connection wasn't sizzling on the page.
Sure.
For me. So for that reason, my heist movie that I am going to say represents the sweetness of this book for me is the movie Masterminds. First of all, this is a genius film. About
this is the children's movie, right? With the DreamWorks? It's like the...
That's Megamind.
Oh. No. It is not.
I was literally just picturing that main character.
It is actually... It's based on a real life crime that happened.
Okay.
Of this real kind of redneck guy who works as a security guard, like a night security guard. And helps execute a massive bank robbery for these two. This woman that he works with, that he, you know, is just enamored with.
Seen this movie.
I'm sure you have. Who has a boyfriend on the side. And the boyfriend's like, oh, get this guy. He likes you to help you. We can get in. We can get in and take all of this money. The armored trucks. Armored truck robbery. Okay. That's what it was. Armored trucks. And he does. And then he ends up taking the fall for it. This really is a real thing. It happened. So the film has Zach Galifianakis plays the main guy.
Oh my God, yes.
Kristen Wiig plays the girl. And then, why can't I think of his name? Owen Wilson plays her sleazeball boyfriend. And they they take all of the money and then send Zach Galifianakis with a very small portion off to Mexico. In hiding until they're going to join him later. And then they never do. And he just takes the fall for it. But anyways, so, again, based on a real crime. The movie is kind of hilarious. It's not really swoony. There's some romance that you're kind of like, oh man, wish that could have gone somewhere, but it didn't really. But there's a whole heck of a lot going on, and it's just kind of madcap, and that's a little bit what this book reminded me of.
Okay.
Which is why I picked it.
Madeline, do you want to go next?
Yes, I do. I picked the newer version of the Pink Panther film starring Steve Martin.
Okay.
And I felt like, what's the actress's name? Shoot. Excuse me.
Yes. His lovely Wesel we are having.
Let us keep up. See Wesel continues. So it's Steve Martin and it's Kevin Kline and
so good.
Emily Mortimer.
Yes, that's right.
Emily Mortimer plays like Clouseau's
secretary?
No. Well, yes, it's right? His secretary. But they kind of have this love interest thing.
Yes.
So Christian and Andy's love story sort of reminded me of Clouseau and Emily Mortimer's character. Because all of their interactions to me just kind of felt like a little bit silly. And just kind of made me want to laugh. Like I was watching like two young people having their first crush is kind of what it felt like. And I feel like in that movie, all the scenes with Steve Martin and Emily Mortimer are just these like hilarious kind of like clumsy physical comedy, hilarious scenes where they're both like very awkward and it's very fun to watch and funny, but very just like silly.
Yes.
And that was kind of the vibe that I got from Christian and Andy. Not super swoony. Like, oh, they're so cute.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
You, like, want them to be together.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely wanted them to be together.
Yeah.
But I meant, like, in that particular instance, it's like, you're like, aww.
Yes.
Like, they should just be together.
You guys are perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so mine is Ocean's 8. And so I'm a big fan of the Ocean's movies. Watch them a lot. That and The Italian Job, I feel like I watched a lot in the mid-2000s.
You went through an Italian Job phase. I think every conversation with Odette for...
Listen, here's the thing.
At least a year was about the Italian Job.
Also, I will say for the record...
Have you seen The Italian Job? Well, that's the same kind of car from The Italian Job.
The Mini Coopers.
I want to tell you right now, I've never seen The Italian Job.
Wait a second, I do not want to see it. Also, for the record,
I'll see it, but...
there is something that... And I still do this to this day. It probably is less annoying now because I'm an adult versus a, you know, eighth grader or something, ninth grader. But I get obsessed with something and I'm really, really into it. A song, a movie, a type of book, a saying, whatever. I'll get really into it, a food, whatever. I'll love it. And then it'll kind of fade into the existence of my mind and then I'll get into something else.
Yeah.
But like for that time period, it's like, I'm going to tell everybody about it.
Absolutely.
Now it'll be a brand if I'm obsessed with a product, if I'm obsessed with a like influence, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
I love, because something that I enjoy so much, I just want to share it with the people who I love the most. So anyways.
This is a theme in your life, just
absolutely.
In general, what you enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
Enjoying something and then sharing it with others.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%. Yes. So Ocean's 8, I feel like there was parts of the movie that I enjoyed and there was parts of this book that I really enjoyed. But I would say that in general, for me, this book kind of, and I mentioned this in the beginning, while I liked it and there were certain parts that I was like, okay, I didn't find the romance particularly the swooniest. I feel like some of the things that I've read in the other series that I've read of Dani's have been a little bit more swoony in certain parts.
Okay.
And I think it could have been, there was so much going on that it was hard to focus. And again, kind of same around that. And I felt like for a good heist movie, there's a lot of like twists and turns and things like that. But for me, Ocean's 8, there was really good moments, just like this book. But I feel like it was like, I also could have, I don't know, like I wanted more. And then but I remember every time that I watch it, I'm like, oh no, I enjoyed that. Here's the thing. Any Ocean's movie that comes out, I'm going to watch. For the record, I'm not talking about like Oceans, the body of water. I'm talking about
Oceans.
Movie
about oceans. She's real into oceanography. Loves the
I mean,
ocean.
I used to be into penguins, so it wouldn't surprise me if I was also into oceanography.
Sure.
I had a long penguin phase that lasted way longer than probably should have been allowed. That and a doughboy phase, but anyway. This is the theme of my life. I get so into something. I was saving all the box tops for a stadium blanket. Anyways.
Did you ever make it?
No, but I did get a duffel bag.
Oh,
I wonder if my mom still has that.
I bet she does.
I bet she does. Up in the garage with all my other stuff. Anyways, but I digress. Wow. How do we get here? What I was saying is I will absolutely read more of these books, but I feel like for me, it wasn't the sweetest book that I've read, and I think that there was just, I think, some things that distracted from kind of the main plot line. But anyways.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I get that. Yeah.
So here's a question, ladies. Yes. I have a point that I want to talk about from the book.
Okay.
It's not necessarily fitting into any category. It's okay. Not a high. It's not a low. It's just literally a conversation that I thought about.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering, in the book, we mentioned, and Morgan, I know you said you were surprised, but like clearly Andy and Christian were not dating. There was just interest. I think they had kissed a couple times by that point. But he reveals then that he, you know, has this past, and he was in juvie and stuff. Mm-hmm. My question is, if you have something like that, and obviously there was a lot happening, like they almost died multiple times. So like, yes. Let's pretend that is off the table, okay? So there's not high stakes of life or death.
Nobody almost dying.
Yeah. It's literally that you meet somebody, you're interested, okay?
Okay.
How soon?
They are V-cute.
V-cute. In the sparks be flying like the 4th of July.
Okay.
And you're like, wow. And I think...
And we've kissed a couple times at this point in this scenario.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or just...
So we've been hanging out for like a week and a half.
Sure. I mean, I'm not one to judge at how soon people kiss each other.
Is that too soon?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not saying... I'm not
judging. I didn't actually kiss my... We were engaged before I kissed anyone. Just because...
Anyone? Oh, well, I mean...
My now husband.
I'm engaged to my husband. Start kissing
I just was like, you know what? Now's the time for the kisses.
Start kissing randos. You get a kiss.
You get a kiss. Okay.
I've never done this before.
Oh my God, this is what they write books about. But what I was thinking is,
I think time frame though has to come into it.
Okay. But like, so for the sake of argument, we could say you're interested in this person.
But you're not going, in a full relationship.
You have not gone on a date maybe at all. What? Maybe you've hung out.
Why have we kissed if we haven't gone on a date at all?
Well, I mean,
I think in this scenario, for it to make sense, you've gone out on a few dates.
Okay, sure. Okay,
you're interested. But it's not like nothing has been established. You're not committed yet. Yes. Okay. Not boyfriend, girlfriend.
So maybe for the sake of this, it's an interesting conversation. And maybe I approach this falsely. But my question is, how early do you think it is important to tell someone a history like I was in jail, etc., something that's that gravity? Like, do you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying something like, oh, I was engaged before, like whatever, talk about your exes.
First of all, jail and juvie feel like two different things.
Well, he called it jail, but he was like 17 or something, wasn't he? Yeah. He was like young. But anyways. Yeah,
it was juvie, I think.
Yeah. But Mike, maybe he went in when he was younger and then got out when he, I don't know. Anyways, so my question is, in your opinion as married women, how soon do you feel like you would want, if you're interested in someone, maybe you've, you know, text, like you're texting or something, like, I don't know, like, because the reason why, do you think that's the kind of thing you tell someone on a first date, like, hey, for the record, because if it's part of your past, but it is something that could affect someone's decision to be with you at all, because there are ramifications for something of that magnitude. I'm not judging. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, I feel like I would want to know that on a first date.
I would not judge someone for not telling me on a first date. I would definitely want it told before we entered into a committed relationship.
Okay.
And honestly, probably I would prefer it pretty early on, even like second or third date, definitely before we kiss. But I wouldn't... Because that's something where it's like first date, I think you're trying to make your best impression on someone.
Sure.
And everyone's, I think, always, you're always a little bit nervous, even if you're like a pro dater. I think you're just like, it's the first time meeting someone, you're kind of getting to know them. It could come up. But I also think sometimes when you share overly personal information, like super personal information like that on a first date, it could scare someone off.
Sure.
Before they even really get to know you.
Okay.
So.
That's fair.
I don't know. I don't necessarily... I think if someone told me, like, if we went on a first date and we were chitting-chatting...
Chitting and chatting.
Chit-chat.
No, I was like, where did that come from?
I was like,
so late.
Is that how you won your husband over?
Apparently. I don't know.
Chitting and chatting?
He would probably say something different. Anyways, so you were chit-chatting and, like, texting and talking a lot, and then he was like, oh, let's go on a second date. So then on a second date, that could even be like a week later, whatever. Then it comes up. I wouldn't be like, why the heck didn't you tell me this on the first date? I wouldn't think that. I think I'd be like, okay. And then I could, and then I also feel like I could weigh it better because I'd spent all that time. Like, I know him a little bit more. Whereas that's first true. Date, that information, I'd probably be like, okay, well, peace out.
I even feel like,
what are your thoughts on that?
I feel like I tend to agree. Like, dirty laundry, quote unquote, probably not first date. Yeah. Especially if it's, like, in your past.
Right.
Like, if you're on parole, like...
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a different story. But if it's, like, okay, yeah, when I was 18 and now I'm 35.
Right.
Like, this happened to me and I'm a changed person because I'm not the same. Whatever. But I feel like dirty laundry, I would say maybe not first date. Like, first date stuff for me is, like, have you been married before? Do you have children?
Yeah.
I need that information on the first date.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you think that if they told you they were divorced on the first date, that's okay, but they don't have to go into the depths of, like, something, even if it's, like, that affected their life, and you know what I'm saying, in a way that's, like, you know.
I feel like that's more just, like, I don't know, like, yeah, even if it was, like, a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that knowledge of, like, I need to know if they've been married before.
Yes.
Like, yeah. If they've been divorced, if they've been married before, exactly. You don't need to, like, air out all the dirty laundry of that right now. But, like, the fact of it, like, I would want to know that on a first date. But I wouldn't, like, pry them for, like...
Oh, no.
All the details.
Because, because that almost seems like, I don't know, right. Almost like in a, like, where do you work? What do you do? What do you like to do for fun? Well, like, hang out with my daughter. Oh, you have a daughter. Yes, I have an 8-year-old daughter. Mother and I, we're divorced now.
Yeah.
Have been for a little while, but I see my daughter, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, it can even be very casual.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I feel like that. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, yeah, I think I agree with you, Morgan.
And I think sometimes it can be off-putting whenever someone airs too much in too the soon. First date. You're just kind of like, why are you oversharing with me? I don't even know you. You know what I mean? But I also see what you're saying where it's like, I want to know. I want to know.
And, part of me feels like, too, and maybe it's just, like, dating in this modern age, it's that, like, by the time that you, because you put in a lot of effort, usually, by the time that you've met someone, and you're like, I'd rather you just, it's similar to, I've been on dating apps, and, like, a guy's told me that he's in AA. Here's the thing, no judgment, but, like, if that's something that is a part of your story, and that's going to affect how you make choices, or even, like, where we go to eat, or things like that, to me, it's, like, that's the kind of thing that, like, telling me up front is helpful, because then I have a decision versus, you know what I'm saying, like, and it almost takes the emotion out of it, because part of it feels like if you wait, and here's the thing, I don't necessarily know that because I see your point, and I think that that's very, very valid, but I'm like, well, would I rather know, like, hey, this is, like, kind of part of my past, if it's something major. I'm not talking everything, I'm talking something like, like, you know.
Like you went to prison.
Yeah. Sure. Well, because, and I think, too, seeing Christian's point of view, maybe this is not how someone would feel in that situation, though, is he was clearly kind of tortured by the fact that, like, he was falling for this woman.
Yeah.
And one could argue that they fell hard and fast because of the danger component, because their lives were at risk, and if they had met under normal circumstances, it may not have progressed that quickly, therefore he wouldn't have needed to tell her before they actually decided if they were dating or not. You know what I'm saying? So, but, like, he literally, it was kind of his inner dialogue, so, you know, I'm curious, too. And also, like, maybe it's, like, how casual is the first date? For instance, are you just meeting for a drink to, like, see if there's, you know, versus, you know, so I feel like there's components for both. But I wonder if it depends on the person and the perspective and how open they are about it.
Yeah.
Because also, like, if you have a criminal record, I feel like I would want to know so that I could make an educated decision, because I might feel differently about dating you or even going on a date with you if I know that about you.
Yes, but see, so that, but I think that is also kind of raises the question. Now this is becoming like a whole thing, like a whole like debate type thing, because I think that.
I thought we would have some conversations
about that. I think that, right, like if someone is very upfront, or even like if you think about it, like puts it in a dating profile, because that's kind of the world we live in now, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever, have a criminal record, blah, 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 blah. And they put it in their dating profile. I would be like, in my head, I'd be like, why the heck would you put that in your dating profile? First of all. It's like, that seems a little bit weird to me, and I would be put off and would probably be like, no thanks. Even if they could be a perfectly nice guy, and
we could get along great, and it might be a criminal, like, it might not even matter if it would have been something where I would have met him first and found out about that after we chatted a little bit, and then he told me about it, and I was like, okay, well, you know, and it might not have, it might have still been off-putting and not...
Maybe it depends on who I wanted to. What it was.
Oh, yeah, that's sure. What I was about to say. Yes, like, I think that's
also,
a big
it feels
deal.
Like if you were a child, like if it was like a juvenile situation, different story than like you're a full-grown adult, because I do see that too. But I'm like, as a woman concerned about my safety, if I'm talking to a guy and I'm going to go meet him in person,
right,
and then I find out he has a criminal record after that, that would be scarier for me of like, really? Well, do you know what I'm saying? Because, like, I like to, like, that feels like you're meeting a stranger that you literally met on the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, there is a component. Now, here's the thing. If you meet them in person and, like, you know who that they're a real personal, like, maybe it's less ominous. Maybe it's a weird word. But, like, it's just, it's terrifying enough to meet someone that you don't even know if they're real or not.
Sure.
And then if you find out after that, especially if you like them, like, oh, yeah, well, I, you know, have this criminal record or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
You know, depending on the severity, it could limit like their job options. And I'm not judging. Absolutely. It's just more like I'm curious, like on the married side, like is that? And I don't even think it needs to be a red flag. Just at like what point do you tell the person?
Yeah, I definitely think it should be told early on. Like big stuff like that, I think should be told early on for sure. I personally don't like if you're just going out with someone. Taking aside that I've never done online dating, so I don't really have that as like a background for anything. So I'm just going to take that out of the equation because
right now,
like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even, it's hard for me to even put myself in that headspace.
Yeah.
I'm just like, even if I just like met someone randomly at church, that's where I meet people. That's all I ever do is hang out at church and the library. If I met someone randomly at one of those places and they're like, oh, let's go out for coffee. We went out for coffee. It would be weird if they told me that on the first date, maybe the second, if we talked and had a good first date and we're chatting, then I would want to know.
Yeah.
But for the first date, I personally don't necessarily think I need to know it.
I have heard a theory of dating. I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast, and if I did, listeners, let me know. But we've done a lot of episodes.
That's true.
But basically, for an online date, you basically tell the person, and you both decide that you're going to show up to the first date and basically air your dirty laundry. The idea being, if you can get past that on the first date, and you're not hiding anything, you're... okay, well, these are the worst things about me. You know what I'm saying? Like, then, okay, you can either decide that these are deal breakers or not, instead of wasting the time investing, feeling committed, and then, you know, like, you like them, and then they reveal this thing, like, hey, I, you know, X, Y, Z. I've never done this, but I'm thinking it's kind of, it's like reverse dating in a way, because it's like, you don't have a history. But a lot of people, it's like, the older you get, the more you don't want to waste your time dating someone that you know you're going to have
which makes sense.
Long time. So I'm wondering if it's like the older you get. Honestly, if I talked to a guy and he offered that, I'd be like, sure.
Isn't that the premise of that? Have you guys ever seen that dating show, like The Baggage? That Baggage dating show? I used to watch that all the time. So the person had like three...
suitcases?
Yes, three suitcases, the main person. And so it was either a guy or a girl. And then they had three options for the date. And
like people options or baggage options?
No. Well, they had their three bags and they brought them onto the stage with them. And it's the, you know, the person. So then it's kind of like bachelor number one, bachelor number two, bachelor number three. They say things about themselves. And at some point, this person starts revealing what their baggage is.
Oh, do they open the bag dramatically?
So they, yes, of course. They open the first bag. It's like the smallest thing, blah, 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 blah. And then the biggest thing. And there's been a wide range. And it's very interesting. And they don't open the biggest one until they've picked someone that they want to go on a date with of the three.
Yeah.
And then once they open that largest piece of baggage, that person can then decide if their baggage is too big for them and be like, I actually don't want to go on a date with you, I refuse. I might go home and watch a few episodes of that show. I can stay awake. It's really interesting. And I remember one episode. I'm just going on and on. But the one episode, the one person, like, because some of them were like big things and you're like, okay, sure.
Like, that's a giant red flag.
Right, that's a big, not necessarily even a red flag, but, like, that's a big one.
Yeah.
And the lady, I remember her smallest bag was that she liked to pop pimples. That was her smallest piece of baggage. And I remember being like, huh, that's a weird thing to admit, I guess.
Like, but on other people or herself? Because that...
Both. She said she found it, like, she was like, if you've got one, I'll pop it for you. As a matter of fact, please let me.
Oh.
I was like, okay. I mean, respect. The person was like kind of gross, but okay.
People watch those. There's like
Dr. Pimple Popper. Yeah, it's a thing. This was before that, I think.
Interesting. That reminds me of a show that I watched. I think it was only out for one season. I think it was called like Dating in the Dark or something. Oh. And you would literally meet someone and you would talk, but the lights
in
were
a dark
on.
Room.
Oh, yes, okay. And you would literally talk to them. And then I think it was that I think the guy would get a reveal of what the woman looked like, and then the woman would then like stand on a balcony, I think, and look. And then if the guy like wanted to go on a date with her, he would like stand in a certain spot. Versus, he would get in the limo and drive away if he didn't think she was attractive.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, Love is Blind is like a popular show. Similar premise now. But
similar
anyways.
Premise.
I
was about to say. Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. Well,
we should move on to like maybe a quick highs and lows God factor, yes. And then wrap it up.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, so high for me was relationship between Harper and Andy. I'm a big fan of female friendships, and my life would be incomplete without the wonderful female friendships that I have in my life. And so for me, I know without a doubt that I have a lot of female friends who would literally say the same thing. Like, nope, I didn't do this, and I'm going to fight to figure out the truth. So yeah. I really appreciated that strength, and I'm excited to see more of Harper for sure. I think a low for me... honestly, probably a little bit of the confusion, I already mentioned this, around the too many cases, and I was interested in both, and my brain just, like, couldn't process the information.
Yeah.
And a God factor for me, I think, was really around the idea of calling out, this sounds very literal, so apologies for this, but calling out to him in a time of need. Like, I like the fact that, like, she took an effort to make that, like, both characters, Danny and Andy, even multiple, Danny and Andy.
I was thinking Danny, Patrick, Christian and Andy,
in peril times. They're on the side of a mountain free climbing. They just wrecked their car. They're literally in a burning building. They're in these situations that they would just even kind of the quiet prayer of Jesus, help me. And I think it's a good reminder that even if you're not in a perilous situation, that your first response can be, yes, I'm trying to decide what to do, but also I'm asking Jesus, come help me. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
That's good. Do you want to go next? Do you want me to go next? Or
sure, I can go next.
Okay, yeah.
I think a high for me was I liked the dynamic of the three siblings.
Love,
Riley,
yes.
And Deckard and Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is fun. It kind of had like a O'Malley.
Yes.
It did. I actually thought that. Yes.
From Dee Henderson.
But they were actual siblings.
Yeah. Yes.
Not found family.
Right, not found family. But I really liked that dynamic, and I was like, oh, like this will be a fun like trilogy series about these three different siblings. I love that. I think a low for me was there was too many POVs for me.
Yeah.
I know I'm a slower reader, so that might be part of it, and it just confused me, and I found myself like going back and having to reread parts because I was like, wait, whose perspective am I getting right now? And there was like POV shifts like mid chapter too, so I was like, what's happening? I'm just kind of a slow reader, and I can handle like two, maybe three POVs, and it needs to like only shift like between chapters for me to really understand.
Be
what's
very
happening.
Clear where it says that. Yeah.
That's what I need. And then, I think a God factor for me was I loved the backstory of the siblings' backstory. Well, I obviously don't love the backstory because it's a tragic backstory. But I loved the way that, like, they all, like, found the Lord and, like, were able to pull themselves out of this really terrible situation. And even after they had, like, already gone down the path that, like, their parents paved for them.
Yeah.
They had already started walking down that path and just, like, the redemption of that. And I wanted to see more of that, I think, from Christian, like in the Christian and Andy plot. But I always love that.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. God makes beautiful things out of like really just terrible situations, and nothing's wasted in the kingdom of heaven. And especially touching when it's like, this horrible things happened to these kids who had no control over it. And it's really beautiful to see like,
that they found
they didn't turn out
yeah
horribly, you know, because that's all they were shown, that's all they were given. And like, look what God did for them. And that's beautiful to me.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Well, that's good. So mine, okay, so high, probably this, like, the series premise, which I guess maybe relates a little bit to, like, what Madeline said about, like, the siblings, the dynamic, just kind of the setup for it. I was like, okay, so this is interesting. Mm-hmm. I like where they're going with this. I like all of the character dynamics. It's, and just everybody is, like, friendly, and it is, like, a big family. There's a real true family element, or, like, a born into family element. Mm-hmm. And then just, like, everybody was close-knit and working together, and I liked that. So I liked the premise kind of for the series, and I'm definitely intrigued to read more of it, because I do want to find out what happens to Deckard and I can't think of her name.
Harper, also Grayson, and then Ray, Grayson too. And
Riley, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. Lowe's, probably similar to what the girl said, it just was a little bit chaotic, and so much so that it was hard for me to follow and hard for me to track with the mystery, and mm-hmm. even though I wanted to and I wanted to see what was happening, I was just having a hard time following it, so that was probably low. And then God factor, I would say that I liked kind of the real feel. It's funny because in romantic suspense I feel like it's so, nothing really feels, not in a bad way, this just, it just happens in the genre, because there's always so much going on and it's always fast and high intensity, mm-hmm. and like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden all these gunmen are after you, and it's the most unrealistic situation that anybody could be in, basically.
Thankfully.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of it that doesn't necessarily feel like down to earth or real,
mm-hmm.
which again is fine, that's part, of, the part of the genre, like, that's okay. But I thought something that felt real in this was just whenever Christian did kind of air out his dirty laundry, so to speak, to Andy, part of it was necessity. Like, they were there was still stuff going on, and they couldn't necessarily just sit and dwell on it. But even kind of how she was thinking about it until they reconnected, and she was like, oh, by the way, about that conversation that we had.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like there was some sincerity there,
mm-hmm.
and I could see a conversation in similar circumstances happening that way.
Yeah,
and that felt very, you know, she was like mulling it over. She prayed about it. She like took them in and thought through it thoughtfully, and that felt, it felt real and sincere and like something that a person of faith would do. Not necessarily just a person of faith, but in this situation that applied. So that, I don't know. I like that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. There you listeners, go. There you go. That's our summary / tangent / recap of
One Wrong Move.
One Wrong Move. And I will tell you, I want to know what happens in Jeopardy Falls.
For sure.
I want to read the story of Grayson and Riley. Avi, big fan. I want to read Harper and Deckard's story.
Mm-hmm.
And any other characters that, you know, make sense.
Any other ones that Danny throws in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm here for it.
For sure.
So, yeah. Well, this was a wonderful episode. Thank you for coming on this journey with us, listeners.
Yes.
It was a wild ride full of fun and rabbit trails, and then bunny hops off the rabbit trails. And
yes.
You know what? I loved every minute.
We love it. Me too.
Thanks, everyone.
Me
too.
Yeah. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Follow us on Instagram at Redeeming Lit Podcast, and be sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify so you don't miss any episodes.
If you have any questions or book recommendations, email us at redeeminglitpodcast@gmail.com.
Until next time,
keep it lit.